This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Becker's Healthcare and Intuitive. Intuitive is the world's leader in robotic-assisted surgery. This is Scott Becker with Becker's Healthcare, joined today by Ian Jasanoff. Dr. Ian Jasanoff is going to talk to us about the coronavirus, what he's seeing, he's on the front lines, what his thoughts are. Ian, can you give us a moment and introduce yourself, and then I'll ask you a bunch of questions about where you see this going.
So I'm Ian Jasanoff, the Chief Medical Officer for the division of UI Health called Miles Square Health Center. We are their FQHC division line, and we serve the most underserved areas of Chicago, West Side, South Side, Cicero as well, and actually on the main campus as well.
Thank you very, very much. And what is your take? What are you seeing so far in terms of intake? Is it yet ramped up? Is it the wave before the storm? What are you sort of seeing so far?
So we've had a complete alterations in our provider schedules. Our division oversees dental, medical, and behavioral health as well. We have given out very sound policies with regard to which patients should be seen, which include your behavioral health folks, patients with substance abuse disorder, and our pediatric patients who need immunization schedules, and our OB patients. We do have an urgent care, which was one of our most robust divisions, which has had a complete fall off in terms of our numbers of patients that we're seeing. So we've really been focusing with regard to the diagnosing and some management of the COVID-19 virus. Also, U of I now, it goes live on Wednesday. We will now have a walk-in clinic, which will be not walk-in, but it'll be by appointment for swab in, swab out, for our drive-through, and for just walk-in appointments, because many of our patients take public transportation.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. And what is your, do you have, I mean, you're a very smart person. You do a lot of studying. You're a very in tune person. What's your sense? Do you have a sense of how this plays out clinically in terms of how bad it gets or what the sense is? And I know nobody can hold you to absolute predictions, but any sense of how this plays out? Are you optimistic at all? Or are you not?
I think if the public remains calm, the public understands various sound guidelines put out by their CDC, put out by their primary care providers, and we all maintain the current standards of social distancing, if we're sick to stay in, if we're feeling symptomatic in terms of those major symptoms of COVID-19, then one should get swabbed for the virus. If one then does have the virus, to still stay home, watch if they're around family members, obviously limit one's activities. I know that the governor has made the mandate starting this past weekend, so it's very important that we all maintain that. Have we hit the wave of everything yet? Probably not. But I think that we hope to mitigate by social distancing, by mitigating the wave of who gets infected, and the ultimate goal is to mitigate overwhelming the healthcare system in terms of the ICUs, the medical floors, et cetera, also the emergency rooms.
And are you confident with some of the social distancing, some of the things that we're doing, that we'll be able to contain this some and ultimately get back to a normal economy at some point, a normal way of life at some point? Any sense of how you sort of see this, you know, playing forward?
I mean, we're trying to, you know, everybody talks about flattening the curve and avoiding that major spike. So the reality is, I think if we all maintain by those sound principles of social distancing, washing one's hands, don't touch one's face, et cetera, don't go to work when you're sick or fever, cough, et cetera. I think at some point, hopefully in the near future, I'm hoping that we have a major upswing in our temperature curve with regard to our weather. I think this will, people will get back to normal at some juncture. Can I predict when that will happen? You know, I'm hoping in the next 30 to 60 days, maybe 90 days most, that we will see the wave that will come through, dissipate, and we can get back to our lives to a certain extent. You know, there's always that there's always a thing we got to watch out for is as we regather again after the leave of the home stay, will we see an uptick in the COVID-19? That will be an interesting thing to look out for.
When you look at this and you see some of the stress on our healthcare community, our providers, our nursing staff, our physicians, does this, aside from needing to protect them better, does this lead you to believe that we just need a lot more providers in this country? I mean, it seems like we have a constant shortage, and obviously things like this really show the amount of it. Any sense on that, Ian? Any thoughts that you have?
Well, we've had for years a shortage of primary care physicians, and then we've pivoted to a certain extent to open up the field to what's called APPs, Advanced Practice Providers, which include PAs and APNs, et cetera. So they're helping to fill in the gaps, but clearly we're very short with regard to filling our residency programs and with regard to the more rural communities. I think we're fairly robust with regard to the major cities, but that will always be an ongoing problem, especially with the rural communities away from the major cities.
And that's going to be a problem for, at this point, for a long time. There's discussions, for example, in some countries they're excusing people from their last year of medical school to get them out earlier, the last year of residency. Any thoughts on those things long-term structurally to improve the number of physicians we have in our country?
So part of the problem we have, at least with American-trained providers, is that some of the medical school tuition rates are very, very high. But a fair amount of students will not segue into a primary care practice because the debt load is so high, and that includes family medicine, internal medicine, OBGYN, pediatrics. So that will always be an issue as far as the debt burden of our students. So I think the issue is, what can we do to help mitigate that debt load will always be a sound priority with regard to our student education and for our residency programs.
You're always a huge problem.
It's ongoing. And actually, part of me is being the CMO over at UI Health. I was the undergraduate director for my department, and that was always the first question I would ask. I would ask them, how much are you in debt, number one? Number two is, what field do you want to go into? And it was helped to enlighten them in terms of, always have your mind in terms of how you pay this back, what options you have out there, and there are things they can do now to help mitigate that. I know that because we're FQHC at UI Health, HRSA is very robust in terms of providing those dollars for those quote give back years that you serve in an underserved community or area. And HRSA provides substantial funds for right towards your tuition debt load, which has been fantastic.
Well, that is fantastic. And so you see that. I mean, what were, when you were teaching, you're talking to people, you're talking to residents, what were some of those numbers in terms of how bad they were in terms of people's indebtedness?
The average debt load is $250,000.
Right. So the big, big numbers in terms of people, in terms of what they ultimately have to pay back. So real, real numbers in terms of payback in economics.
100%. And, you know, a lot of them don't want to, they basically ignore it through medical school and they have no plan. And I was always trying to have them keep it in the forefront in terms of, hey, what is your plan? Because at some point, you may want to have a family, take a vacation, have your own retirement money set aside for yourself. But so I think planning is going to be very, very important for those students. And I, you know, working for an FQHC, I have the, I don't want to say, for lack of a better word, but I got the biased perspective of how well the government through HRSA, because we are HRSA supported with regard to our funding, they are very robust with regard to providing that remuneration back to the students. And it's substantial monies per year.
That's fantastic. It really is. So one more minute on coronavirus. Your long-term perspective, the economy, the clinical, what's the long-term perspective of this? Are we going to get out to the other side of this? It's going to be okay for your kids and my kids. What's the long-term perspective of this?
I mean, we will, of course, at some juncture. It'll be very important. What I would respectfully have all the healthcare systems the country engage, what went well, what not do so well, help to mitigate for future, because let's face reality here. This is not the first or last time this is ever going to happen. So preparedness is going to be essential, such as the pandemic unit that was disbanded by the current administration. That could have been a valuable insight. I think decisive action by people in leadership that are robust with operations and having that leadership skill set to bring the right teams together. I think we've done a good job at UI Health. We put together some fantastic teams to help mitigate the further expansion of COVID-19. We've established proper work protocols with regard to our providers and our support staff. We put together, in a matter of days, the drive-through and the walk-up clinic at UI Health, which is located at 1220 South Wood. It will go live on Wednesday. I'm very proud of that initiative that we're putting together, and it's people come together. That's the key thing.
Well, and you yourself are a very good leader in your system that you're watching. As you watch these systems evolve, and I'll stay out of politics for a second, are there leaders that you're seeing at any level that you think deserve particular praise for how they're sort of handling this?
So from my perspective, I report to the vice chancellor. Well, my first person I report to is my CEO, Mr. Henry Taylor, who's done a fantastic role in terms of giving us the proper support and allowing his teams to do our jobs. Then we report to our vice chancellor, Dr. Robert Barris, who's been a fantastic leader bringing together all the proper content experts with regard to operations, medical, supply chain, personnel, human resources together. And we've come together as a solid team, and we're going to move forward and tackle this problem.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you very, very much. Ian, anything else you want to share with our audience as they try and figure out how bad these ventilator shortages, mask shortages are? Any other insight on what's going on?
Well, I know that there is a shortage. I just was hearing our governor give his press comments with regard to his inability to go right to the manufacturers. He's competing with federal government and other healthcare systems. That needs to be, I think, reanalyzed for future potential issues. So I think, like I said before, having that look back of what went well, what did not go well, and better preparedness will help us. I think one of the major problems we have with our healthcare system is just the PPEs, the protective provider equipment. And who would think the country of this size with our robust healthcare system that we would have a problem with gowns, masks, goggles? Who would have thought this? I think we have to reach out to some of those companies that we work with and perhaps bring some of that manufacturing back home when crises like this happen, because we're still relying on outsourcing to foreign countries for those types of items. And I think that has to be analyzed.
Right. And when you really need them, it's a problem if you can't get them from overseas, right? I mean, just a debacle.
It's because they're shut down with their own issue, and here the wave is coming to us right now. What do we do? And our hands are tied. We right now with our clinics, we have about a 48-hour supply limit or stock out with regard to our
right
masks. A real issue, especially with our urgent care. And I made rounds this morning to talk with my urgent care director to how we could mitigate. Spread within the providers, because if our urgent care providers go down, we cannot pivot from there.
There is not a front line from there. Then you know, like right now, the urgent care and everything else helps keep people out of the hospitals. So
exactly.
It's really, really important.
Exactly, 100%.
Well, Ian, I got to tell you, just a pleasure visiting with you today. And anytime you have something else you'd like to speak to our audience about, we'd love to hear from you. Love getting a chance to visit with you, Ian. Thank you, Dr. Chasanoff.
Thank you so much. Great talk.
Thank you very much for joining us today. This podcast was brought to you by Becker's Healthcare and Intuitive. Intuitive is the world leader in robotic-assisted surgery.